Hi, this is Hugh Greenwood from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Here is your host, Dean Basich.
Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Basich. You can find me on X at Hashtag Kangas, Instagram Hashtag Kangaroos Podcast, TikTok Hashtag Kangaroos 1. So tonight I'm joined by the North Pod Show host in Jason Hunt in another Get to Know You episode. So I've obviously had a Josh Neal from the Further North Pod as well. So yeah, it's good to get to know these boys because they're obviously big North Melbourne supporters who do their own podcast as well. So make sure to check out their work and like all their work and subscribe to it and so forth. And yeah, I really enjoyed the chat with Jason. I was going to say Josh Neal then, but I was with Jason. And obviously it talked about some of his favourite players, some of his favourite games as well. I know the popular opinion has always been the 2014 elimination final against Essendon and a couple others, but he had some other games too, which I found interesting. Also found interesting when I asked him the question about any players that you didn't like or rate. I was a bit surprised by a couple of them, I'm not going to lie to you, and I got a bit defensive with one of them, which I mentioned, but it was all good and all a bit of fun as well, which is the main thing. So let's not waste any more of your valuable time and bring on Jason right now to chat to him about how he became a North supporter.
So tonight I have a very special guest from the North Pod Show in Jason Hunt. Jason, this is a Get to Know You episode, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners would only hear you chatting about North and previewing or reviewing our games, usually their losses. So we may as well go all the way back, and how'd you become a North supporter?
Well, thanks for having me on, Dean. I really appreciate it. I think like a lot of people, I was just indoctrinated by my parents, or my dad in particular. So I just got passed down to me, really. I think some of my earliest memories are going to the footy with my dad. We'd sort of drive in halfway and catch the train, and we'd watch North Melbourne in the late 90s and early 2000s. That's when I was kind of first going to the footy. And one of my first footy memories was going around to my dad's place to watch the 99 grand final because he had a big TV, but big TVs back then were, 40 or 50 centimeters deep and about as deep as they were wide. So I was only 7 or 8, so I wasn't super interested in it at the time, but I certainly remember going around and it was a big deal for my dad. And I don't remember the 96 grand final. I was too young for that, but I remember going to the footy with my dad, and he was a big Wayne Carey fan, which hasn't necessarily aged very well, but he was big time into the 90s team. And my mum was a big Glenn Archer fan, and she still is, but they were the kind of two that grew up as the heroes in our household, I guess. I just loved going to the footy and loved watching the footy with my family. And then as I grew into independence, I started taking myself to the footy, and off we go. I haven't really, to be honest, come across that many North Melbourne fans just in my general friendship group. So often when I was going, when I was younger, I'd just go by myself, or I'd grab a mate and we'd go to a game where I'd sort of return the favour. But over time I've, made a couple of friends, and we've made a community of it. But I mean, we all know what being a North Melbourne fan's like. You're the novelty. Oh, that's, you're the one. I think I've enjoyed, enjoyed that shtick, I guess. So yeah, just indoctrinated into the pain like the rest of us, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like you had no choice if your family pretty much all went for North, and you pretty much had to go for them as well, by the sounds of it. That's not a bad thing. I only followed him through my older brother at the time. So, yeah, nothing exciting on my part as well. So, but nothing wrong with that. And how long have you been a member for now?
I've been a member 17 or 18 years. Nice. My family weren't members, but when I was sort of old enough to want to get a membership, I started getting one. And so it was around that kind of 2006, 2007 period when Brayshaw was in charge, and there was that talk of us going to Gold Coast. And I thought, well, now seems like a great time to you know, get behind the club and become a member and start really attending matches like regularly. So yeah, ever since then, I haven't let it lapse. Some years, I mean, the COVID years, we didn't necessarily get the value out of it, but yeah, I try to go to as many games as possible and support the lads. So yeah, coming up on 20 years over the next couple of years, which is yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about actually, but yeah, it's been I think it's one of those things that even if you're not going to get the value out of it, like games wise, like if you love the club, I think it's such an easy thing to do if you're in a position to do it. So yeah, I don't even really think about it every year. I just go, yep, let's go again.
Yeah, I think now you're pretty. I remember when I first joined, and this is going back in the 90s when I first joined it. Yeah, memberships like they're about $100 or something like that. Whereas now it's what is it, about $250 or something like that, just for the standard regular 11 game one. So you probably don't get too much value in return, even if you do go to every game. But it's more just you support the club. You know, that's why I do it pretty much predominantly. And I think that's what majority of members do. I don't think they do it to get value out of it. I'll save, you know, $20 for the year or something like that if I go to every game, because you're always going to miss games anyway. There's always something that comes up, like a wedding, or you might come down with COVID or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, or something always comes up. So, yeah, I mean, you're generally a member because you want to support the club. That's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's obviously those people, and nothing against them at all, that have those their reserve seats, and that's their spot, and they want to sit with their community. I think you know, that's obviously a premium, but I'm more than happy to get my general admission seat and go and sit wherever, and as you say, just like support the boys. That's what it's all about, really, supporting the club.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Like with your membership, like where do you prefer watching football? I know we don't play at the MCG much, but if you had a choice between MCG and Marvel, where do you prefer watching the game?
I probably an unpopular opinion, but I really do like watching footy at Marvel, and it's just a like convenience thing. Like you're not having to worry about it raining. You're not having to worry about it being super windy. And you can typically be a bit closer than you are at the G just because the G's a bigger venue. So I have no issues going to Marvel. And I particularly like to sit, again, probably an unpopular opinion, like I'll sit top level behind the goals because I really like to see that kind of how teams are setting up across the ground. I feel like if I'm sitting on the wing, I may as well be watching on TV because I'm just getting the same shot but further zoomed out. So particularly at Marvel, you're pretty close. If you're up the top and behind the goals, you can see both ends pretty well. It's the G. If you're up the top at the G, sometimes you've really got to get the binoculars out to see the other end of the ground.
Oh, you're pretty much looking at the scoreboard. And seeing what's going on the other side of the ground. The MCG. And I agree with you. It does feel like it's a lot closer, and you're a lot closer to the action, even on level three. I generally, last year, I've been sitting level two. Before that, I was on level one. I kind of enjoyed level one there for a period of time because you sort of see how fast the game moves. Like you sort of see, like you think, geez, this is breakneck speed of a game going from one end to the other. But yeah, like level two, I usually sit on a half forward flank, and you do get a good view. And level three is fine. Like, it doesn't feel like it's that far away. I know a lot of people, and like you said, it's probably not a popular opinion with a lot of people. But level three is fine. I don't mind sitting there if I had a choice. So yeah, no, it is a much. I find it a much better venue, and it sounds like you find it. You prefer it much more than the MCG. The good thing is we don't play at MCG much, Jason.
No, there doesn't seem to be much. Much chance of that changing in the near future, I'd say. I think we're doomed to be, depends which way you look at it, but I think we'll be playing most of our games at Marvel for the foreseeable future. I think it's fine, and we can totally tailor our game plan around the fact that we're playing under the roof, and then come finals time when you know you'll be playing at the G, it really doesn't matter. Like, it's a level playing field, and if it rains, it rains. So works for me, works for them, and we've just got to start winning some games.
Yeah, and then we'll get more games at the G, so if we play finals and so forth. So, like you said, it might be a fair way away. But we'll get to that later. Who have been some of your favourite players?
I mean, it's a boring answer, but Boomer was always my favourite growing up as a kid. And I just say boring because I think a lot of people would have that answer. But you know, I really started following really closely as a kid in that nearly 2000s, and that was really peak Boomer. I just love the way that he played with flair, and he could play in the forward line or in the midfield, and he just made others look better around him. I just, you know, I think it also, he's a bit of an underdog in that he's a bit shorter, and you know, he really had to work to become a player. I think everyone loves a bit of an underdog. So he was certainly my favorite as I was younger. I really grew to appreciate Drew Petrie, the big dish. The second half of his career, he was just such a like beacon in that forward line. I think early days he was kind of getting thrown around and playing center half back a bit and a bit in the ruck, and I think he was a bit lost, and I was like, geez, I don't know about this guy with the tips in his hair. But as soon as he got put full, like at forward, in the forward line full time, I just think he was such a great player for us there. There was also a year or two where he did, and I don't know if you ever listened to it, the AFL Exchange podcast, which, gosh, that must be now more than 10 years ago possibly, but I just thought, like, I really appreciated listening to him kind of talk about footy and bring North Melbourne, you know, to the wider public, I suppose, because, you know, we weren't and we aren't a bigger club. So that likened me to him as well. In terms of the kind of, you know, out there answers, like, I was a sucker for a medium forward for a while there. So I loved Aaron Edwards with those high marks. A really niche one would be Ben Warren. I don't know if you remember him.
Yeah, Milky.
Yeah, that's right. For whatever reason, like, I think he only played about 40 games, but I really wanted him to be better than he was, I guess. I really just loved it when he was marking on his chest. He was such a good shot at goal. He just didn't give himself enough opportunities, I guess. Loved Lee Adams. I guess a really similar type of player to Boomer in that he was a bit shorter and was up against it, but he made the best of what he had. And I followed Aaron Mullock quite closely because I played some junior football with him. So, yeah, I think those are probably the main names. I loved Higgins. I thought he had an amazing career at North Melbourne. And Scott Thompson, I just love from the perspective of he just got under the skin of it, all those defenders, and I just respected it so much. Like, I know he wasn't the most skilled player, and I'm sure that opposition fans probably have no idea who he is, but he had no fear. He went and did a job. Didn't matter if the public or the opposition hated him. I really respected that from Scotty Thompson.
Yeah, no, he was he was a very underrated player for a long period of time. And like you said, he did get under the skin. I remember that Barry Hall incident. Where he sort of tried to ruffle him, but yeah. I don't know if he got the better of him. But I remember that day because that was my wedding day. So that was 2010 in May. And I remember seeing that incident.
He put on a show for you.
Yeah. So we got smashed that game. We absolutely got obliterated like normal. I think they kicked the first 8 or 9 goals, Bulldogs or something like that. So, yeah, but, I don't know what he was thinking. But, he was a very good one-on-one play. It's interesting, you know, Ben Warren, you mentioned him. Probably a player that we've had a million of. Like, they start their careers off on fire, then by the time they get to 30, 40 games, they're pretty much out of the system. So he's just one of those players that just fell out. For whatever reason. Aaron Mullett, I didn't mind Fishy. He had a good left foot.
Yeah, he did. It was a really, and it was interesting. Like, I only played 2 or 3 years of footy with him, just local footy, and he was a good player, but he wasn't a star like at that time. But, you know, I think it's that one of those ones where development people could see what he could become. So once he went on and played like rep level and then obviously got into the system, like, he really took off and like an amazing leap. He could really kick the ball. He was great to watch, and he was quite the pickup. Like, I think he was pretty late in the rookie draft that we selected him. So he's the sort of player that we would love to be, you know, stealing at the moment with the position that we're in. You'd love to be getting some rookies that really come on and can play sort of 100 or so games.
Yeah, he played over 100 games. I'm sure he did. And he went to Carlton for a year towards the end of his career. So, yeah, look, I didn't mind him. A lot of people didn't like him for whatever reason. But yeah, I thought he had potential, but probably another one of those players that got to a certain point and plateaued, I guess. And yeah, unfortunately, finished his career at Carlton and only played 1 year there, but had a pretty disappointing year. But what about current day favourite player or players?
Yeah, I mean, boring answer again. Nick Larkey's the obvious. I think he's just been so reliable and there's that underdog element to him as well, having been such a late draft pick. He speaks so well, he plays so well. So I love watching Larkey play, and I think, you know, he's just such a great leader. You know what you're going to get from him. It's such a shame that sort of Ben Brown's body let him down, because, you know, the two of them playing together would have been unstoppable if you could get the ball in there. And I know there was a little period where they were playing together, but obviously that was before Larkey had really come on. I guess similar to Aaron Mullett, I'm following Will Phillips quite closely just because he actually attended the primary school that I teach at. So,
nice.
I'm really hoping the best for him. I'll follow him more closely than others, I suppose. And in terms of who I really like watching, Sheasel, you know, that's again a pretty obvious one, but he's just a cut above. You're really happy every time he's got the ball in his hands. And same with Taron Thomas. Like, I think if I was getting a number on my back right, like tomorrow, it's probably Sheez, just because, you know, he loves the club. He's got that skill. Like, he's going to be a 250 gamer. It's just what position of the ground is he going to play most of those games in, which is going to be the interesting thing to watch. So they're probably my most recent favourites. But, yeah, Larkey and Sheez are the two if I had to pick a couple.
What do you think? I might as well talk about it while I got you here now. It's before the season starts. What do you think Sheez plays next year?
I think because we've picked up Zach Fisher and we've drafted I've forgotten that one that plays off halfback that we drafted.
Hardiman.
Spot on. Yeah. Thank you. Part of me thinks that with those two coming in and obviously Goda and Bergman still developing, it gives us the opportunity to move him forward / midfield. I think, and my preference would be that he plays in one more year in defence and then just is experimenting in that midfield forward role, because he played it so well this year. He was far and away our best player. It's just, to me, it seems so backwards to then move him out of that position. But that being said, I don't want him playing halfback for the rest of his career. So if we move and it means that he doesn't play quite as well, but he's going to end up being a better player in the position that we move into, I'm pretty happy with it. But I have a feeling we're going to move him just because of the clientele that we've brought in. And we know their forward line wasn't super functional except for Larkey. So if we were adding him in there, I think it could only be a value add. It's just, you know, what you're taking out of the back line. It's a bit of robbing Peter to feed Paul, I think.
I think at this stage, and this might not be a popular opinion, I think you'll play midfield and go forward for little spells. I think he's just too good of a player to play as a forward, because we might not get the ball down there enough for him. So,
and that's totally valid. Like, I could see that perspective as well. It's just that I think you're absolutely right. My brain just goes, we've got so many midfielders. Yeah. How are we going to fit them all in? But you're spot on. Like, if we stick him in the forward line, it never gets there. We're absolutely wasting him. So I don't know the answer at the moment.
Yeah, I think Simpkin will play as a high half forward. I don't think he's going to spend as much time in midfield. I think McKercher, they'll start off a halfback flank and give us a bit of drive out of there. I think he looks like a natural behind a ball player that will eventually go into midfield. And that leaves us with LDU. I mean, you've got, we build a midfield around him, but then you get Wardlaw, Sheasel, Will Phillips, and then, a couple of others rotating through there. I think it'll be a pretty strong midfield. And I think you just need that bit of class. I think you put him right in the guts, like, just get him in there now. May as well. I think he's already taken time off his time trial. But I think we talked about that off air. Not that that means much, that these days, I think most AFL players are pretty fit anyway, whether they take off 5 seconds or gain 5 seconds. It's not going to make that much a difference in the course of a game. But at this stage, I think he'll play midfield and go forward. So, yeah, for little spells. But, yeah, wait and see what happens, I guess, in the first game of the preseason and so forth. Best player you've ever seen it for North?
I think Daniel Wells had the most skill. Like, he wasn't consistent, but in terms of the raw talent and the, you know, he was just a beautiful player to watch. He sort of glided across the ground. He could do things that no one else could that have put on a North Melbourne jumper in the last sort of 20, 25 years, I would say. As I said, I'm just slightly too young. I sort of missed the Wayne Carey glory days. I really only saw the last couple of years of his career at North Melbourne. And I remember going and watching probably in maybe 2000 or 2001 with my dad, and, you know, we were just kicking it to him every single time. And I was going, Dad, like, what's going on? Like, he's actually not as good as we think, because he's not, you know, delivering for us. So that's kind of my memories of Carey, despite knowing the fact that he's dominated the 90s, you know. So I didn't necessarily see much of that. I mean, Boomer, just for the fact that he was able to play 430-odd games, like, you've got to be pretty bloody good. And I think Majak as an athlete, like, obviously wasn't an amazing football player. He had one really good year in defence and, you know, did some pretty special things. But as an athlete, he's probably the best athlete we've ever had, or certainly in my time. It was just that, you know, he didn't quite have the skills to put it all together, and then his body let him down for a variety of reasons. So, I think if I was going to say the best players I've seen, if I'm going Wells is the most skillful. Boomer had the staying power, and Majak as an athlete are probably the best that I've seen.
Yeah, it's a bit unfortunate with Majak. I think the year before, obviously, the whole incident happened, he was having a really good year on the back line, and he was turning into, you know, a very good intercept player. And like you said, he was very athletic, and he used his athleticism pretty well in defence. But obviously, yeah, the whole thing happened, and, yeah, it sort of really pretty much finished his career, unfortunately. But look, as long as he's okay and in a good place mentally, which sounds like he is, so that's all that matters. But
he was a great bloke too. I think that's the part that really was so heartbreaking. And I know, I think, as you say, I think he's in a good place now. And I've seen on social media that he's, you know, still connected with some of those North Melbourne players. So, which is fantastic. But yeah, it is a shame. I think we invested so much in him. And it was a shame that it didn't quite work out, but we certainly saw for probably a year and a half or so what he was capable of as an athlete, because as soon as we put him in defence and he didn't have to necessarily worry about his leading patterns and he was just following the ball, it was a different player. So, yeah, he was an amazing athlete.
Yeah, definitely was. Well, I have read his book, and I recommend anyone, if they want to read his autobiography as well, to go get it. I think it's pretty cheap at Big W these days, I think, or even Angus and Robertson, they probably sell them pretty cheap, so you can get that and read up on his life. Now, I don't mind asking this question. Any players that you didn't like or rate?
Oh, look, how long do you have?
A couple of hours.
I've certainly had some whipping boys over the days. Again, growing up, did not rate Corey Jones at all. I hated him. And I know he had some great games, but I think he just had the yips at the wrong times for me. Like, there was so many times where I thought, yep, we've got a goal sewn up and he'd spray it. And I just went, oh, Corey Jones again. I didn't love Lee Harding. I think he had speed and that was about it for me. But again, like, some of these opinions are probably you know, based on youth, because I see a couple of bad things and I go, that's it, they're done. Lee Brown, was a classic. You know, he was that player that you know that you can let him go and he's going to go and do something, and he did. But what he did at North Melbourne, I think he probably played 100 or so games for us, and I don't know that he did much on the field for us. But then he went and won a premiership elsewhere, so sucked in us, I suppose. More recently, like Sam Wright. I know that he had that special moment against Essendon that turned the game, but me and my mates called him Sam Wrong. He just made so many poor decisions, Sammy Wright. So, yeah, as you can see, I mean, I could go on. Liam Anthony loved to turn it over. He knew how to find it but couldn't kick it. So I've certainly had my whipping boys over the years. I was trying to sort of look at other players that, you know, I didn't rate. And I guess really the question is who kept getting a game that you don't rate, because there's plenty that I haven't rated that have played for 15 games and have headed off. So that's why I've listed those players, I suppose. They were players that played for a long time that I genuinely didn't love. But yes, I know that probably Corey Jones in particular might be an unpopular opinion, but I remember turning off the TV a couple of times after actions that he'd done on the field. So I probably just saw the worst of him and didn't see the best of him.
No, he kicked that winning goal against the Swans. That was probably, yeah, the one on the boundary. That was a pretty special moment. I actually didn't mind him. You broke my heart when you said Lee Harding. I used to love him. So, yeah. But like you said, it was sometimes you'd run into an open goal, run at full speed and spray him or something like that. And you think, yeah, you could sort of see it. People sort of got frustrated with him. And when I go to games, a lot of people did around me sort of get frustrated, especially kicking at goal. There's one season he kicked like, I think it was 30 goals, 30 or something like that, with about 10 out on a full. So
yeah, and I think probably in my youth, and I say it as though I'm an old man now, I was pretty unforgiving for a clanger. And I think that Corey Jones and Lee Harding were quite, as you say, they were heavy on the clangers from time to time, and I just couldn't stand for it. I think possibly now I'd be more forgiving. Like I love Lindsay Thomas, and he was also great at clangers. So I just think it was lucky that, you know, Lindsay was maybe 10 or so years later and I was a bit more forgiving. As I was sort of thinking about how to answer that question, some of the other players that I didn't rate were just those one. We've picked up so many of those mature age recruits over the past 10 years that I've just thought, why have we, like, what are we doing? Like Farron Ray, Robbie Nahas, Billy Hartung, Dom Tyson, Tom Campbell. Like, I don't really understand what our, I guess that's more my issue with the club strategy. But that, to me, from the outside, I was looking at those players going, yeah, they're fantastic VFL players. But why do we think that we're going to bring them to the club and they're going to be anything more than that? Different type of frustration, I guess. I think that's probably more so directed at the club that we decide to spend a couple of years on those blokes. But anyway, I don't know how you feel about some of those pickups, but they've baffled me the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, Tom Campbell's still on St Kilda's list at the moment, which I find a little bit surprising. I don't think he's played an AFL game, or maybe he played one this year. I'm not too sure. Lee Brown, you mentioned, he played 118 games for us. I think he played over, you know, through the course of his career, he played 246 games. So yeah, he did all right for himself, the old Anvil. But, it's funny. Like, if you've got a bit of height, I think teams give you a bit more leeway if you've got a bit of height, like if you're about 200 centimetres. Yeah. So, but, we've certainly had some in recent times. Like, I think I mentioned during the course of the year that Jacob Edwards, who shouldn't have even been playing VFL football, he was that poor this last year, and he was projected. He was a number one mid-season draft pick, and it was a year and a half ago, but. I don't know what the hell happened to him. So maybe it's our development. I don't know with these players, but
I think it just comes back to that, like, there's been, and it's not new, that this obsession with just getting the best athletes in and then hoping that you can teach them footy. And sometimes athletes is really like they're tall and they can move and they've got some strength about them. And I guess, you know, we did that with Majak Dore and we got something out of it, but there's plenty of stories like Jacob Edwards where they've grabbed an athlete or someone with some real height and strength and then have said, well, let's hope that we can translate that into being able to kick a footy properly or having game sense. So it's a crazy comparison, but for argument's sake, like you see Harry Sheasel come in, who is not a tremendous athlete. Like he's a good athlete, but he doesn't have tremendous ability in that area. He just knows where the footy is and he knows how to kick it. Like, and I think that's where I go, well, actually, these guys that have elite skills and know innately where the footy is, why don't we teach them how to run? Like, anyway, there's so many stories of these players that have ended up on AFL systems because they're wonderful athletes. But if you don't have any game sense at all, it's pretty hard to play at AFL level.
Yeah, and then you get those good teammates. You know, those good club players. Shout out to Daniel Howe. favorite game of all time?
I mean, I'll skip over the 2014-2015 finals wins. I think you've talked about that goes with plenty of people. The 2007 semi-final against the Hawks, I was at. That's probably my favorite, my personal favorite. I had a perfect view of Aaron Edwards' mark that he took that should have been mark of the year if it was eligible. It was Buddy Fever after he'd kicked 7 goals the previous week and we really shut him up. I hate the Hawks. So it was that was a fantastic game to be at. Probably my favorite and one of those ones that, you know, if it had gone the other way, maybe I'm not as a fanatic supporter as I am today. It was just, you know, it hit me at the perfect time. I also have a really strong memory of playing the Pies in 2008. I think it was early in the year and it was a pretty close game. I think we'd come back from a couple of goals down and there was a center bounce that was absolutely horrific. It went straight to Adam Simpson who kicked it like forward for a clearance and we kicked a goal from that and that essentially won us the game. I just remember that not being a great game of football, but a great sort of piece of entertainment, I guess. I remember being at that game and I think if I'm not mistaken, that bounce was part of the reason why they actually changed the rules so that the umpires could bring it back. Cause it pretty much bounced at a right angle, a horrific bounce. But a great game of footy. I think Alan Didak ran into nearly an open goal and
that's right.
Which gave us the win. So that was a pretty special one. And then again, like a pretty common one, but more recently, Ben Brown kicking 10 against Power. Like the game itself wasn't great, but just, you know, sitting back and watching him slot 10 straight was pretty special. So they're probably my favorites, but that Aaron Edwards mark is just etched into my memory. I would say I watch that on YouTube two or three times a year. I just love that mark, love that game.
Well, I think he kicked 4 goals that game too. He had a really good game. Yeah, and it was the Jesse Smith game where he was best on ground, and we thought, oh, geez, we've got a superstar here. But his ankles just didn't hold up, unfortunately. So, which is a bit heartbreaking because, he was a big part of our team going forward. I think he was probably only 20, 21 years old back then. And, unfortunately. His body didn't hold up, which seems to be the story of us for probably 20 odd years.
There's a few of those around. I think you're right. He kicked 4. He was such an accurate kick, Aaron Edwards. I think amazing, you know, he took specky after specky, but I think the part that was maybe underrated somewhat was how accurate a kick he was. And I think for me, that game was particularly special or memorable just because the games either side of it were so horrific. Like we got belted by Geelong by 100 points.
That's right.
We go and beat the Hawks who were, you know, they were just getting going. They were about to go and be destroyers for the next 7 or 8 years. So they came in massive favourites, even though we'd finished high on the ladder. And we really, you know, I think we beat them by 30 or so points and then went to Port Adelaide who then spanked us by 80 or 90 points and it wasn't, you know, the games either side weren't great, but that one game was fantastic. So, they're probably my big games, I'd say.
Yeah, no, good call, I think. So, a couple of good ones there. And it's good to do something a little bit different. I really like it. So, now we'll go to the present time. What are you hoping to see in 2024, Neil?
Look, I'm a realist, so I think it's going to be around getting games into the young players. And we know that, you know, Shees and Wardlaw and McKercher and Dersma, like we know those high draft picks are going to play and they're going to be good players. I think I'm more interested in, you know, those players that are sort of one tier down, like which ones are going to make it. So I think for me, it's going to be a bit of a year of finding out like how good are players like Phillips and Powell and Goda and Bergman and Curtis, like how good are they going to be? Like, can they take a step and sort of really cement themselves as definite AFL players? So I'm hoping that this year we can kind of find out a bit more about those type of players. In terms of wins, look, I'm hoping for 7, but I don't think we'll get there. I'd be expecting kind of 4 or 5. I think I'm hoping that there's more spread out than the wins that we had this year. I don't want to go 2 and then lose 20 in a row and then win one at the end. I think if we can win 1 or 2 games at the start of the year and win a couple in the middle and a couple at the end, like, that'd be fantastic. It'd be lovely to finish not in the bottom 2, but I struggle to see which 2 teams we're going to be better than across the course of the year. Like, sure, West Coast might be bottom 2 with us again, but I don't know for next year who's going to, you know, drop off a cliff for us. So my vibe is that we probably finish up with, 4 or 5 wins and hopefully finish maybe 2nd or 3rd bottom. And I think from there we can start to expect some improvement, because we've only really now just completed the clean out. Like, Zeebel, Cunners and Goldie out the door is sort of the last of that you know, older group. So I do think it's going to be hard to take a big step next year. I think it might be a similar year, but hopefully we're able to steal a couple more wins. So it feels better than it did this year. Because, I mean, as you know, like, there was a couple of games this year where we really should have won and we didn't. So it's just around getting, you know, snagging a couple of those. And I think it'll feel like a better year, even if, you know, our percentage is pretty similar.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to last year, that Sydney game, obviously the infamous Sydney game where the interchange infringement probably cost us a game. If we won that game, we wouldn't have the same record as Swans at the time, who went on to play finals. So it might have been a little bit of a sliding doors moment. Yeah, he might have won 5 or 6 this year. He might have been able to pinch a couple more. And I think as long as we're more competitive and don't get those, you know, I think the first half of the year, obviously when Clarkson was going through all his trouble, we sort of, we're playing like we did under Noble, losing games by, you know, 7, 8 goals, only kicking 40, 45 points a game, almost playing really boring brand of football, not developing. So, yeah, we're certainly hoping that, I know it's only a small sample size, and I've mentioned this a million times, but that round 23 game was a bit more attacking, and, you know, we will be opened up on the other side. But if we're going to be proactive and play a bit more run and gun, then we should be able to kick more scores, which would be good. And, we want to see games. If we're going to lose 130 to 100.
Yeah, and I spot on. I think I just want to see that a game plan that, you know, gives Larky the best opportunity to kick as many goals and also gives our other forwards opportunities to kick some goals. And that's what we saw in that Gold Coast game. It was just gung-ho, get moving at all costs. And I think, you know, we could probably tweak that down maybe 10%, but that's the kind of play style I'd love to see. And we'll pinch a few. I think it'd be great if we could beat a good side. And, you know, the opportunities will come up. Like, we were competitive against some of the better sides last year. We just didn't have that finishing staying power. Like, I don't think that we believe that we were good enough to win. So hopefully if we, you know, if we can win 5 or 6, but maybe 1 or 2 of those are against the top 8 side, I think that'll give us some real confidence that we're on the right track. And as I say, we can find a bit about, you know, some of those players like in that middle range and whether or not, you know, Conlon's going to work in defense. Like, I think it's going to be a finding out kind of year. And then we can really, you know, aim to start seeing some improvement following that, I think.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope so. So in saying all that, when do you think we can compete for another flag?
Yeah, look, I think it's not soon. I think if everything goes well, 4 or 5 years time, we could be competing for a flag. But that is, you know, we don't miss at the draft. Everyone's development comes along well. Like, that's best case scenario, I think. I think we could start looking at finals in maybe 2026, 2027, that kind of area. And then, yeah, that's when potentially I could see, you know, you've got to make the finals and then you've got to be an actual top 4 side. And I think we are so far off that, but we've got a solid base to build from now. We've got, you know, 5 or 6 really good young players to set us up. It's just what we can do around them. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a while yet, but if we can continue to make good development decisions, get the right support staff around and you know, experiment with putting players in the right spots, then I think we'll be setting ourselves up for 4 or 5 years time. And that's when we could become, a destination club again. Like we saw that with Higgins and Jared Waite and Del Santo. Like they came because they thought that there was a chance at success. That's the only time that we're going to be a destination club. So we've got to get ourselves up into that top six or so, and then I think we could try and snag a free agent or two that sees their chance at something. But it's going to be a while. Is the short answer?
Yeah. Oh, definitely will be. Yeah, we're under no illusions about that. That's for sure. I mean, I think we've won what 12 games in the last 4 years or something like that. So, it can change. Turn around pretty quick. I think Collingwood have proved that in the last couple of years that it can turn around. But I think at this stage we just got to be a bit more patient. And like you said, I think 2026 is probably a realistic goal that we can start pushing for finals. And then after that, who knows what happens. But like you said, I mean, there's other teams that are ahead of us at the moment in development as well. I think Gold Coast are certainly going to be pushing, and you probably have to think Hawthorn and a couple others as well around that mark are probably going to be, certainly with us up there, but, in 2026, 2027 sort of era. So we'll see how we go. Well, Jason, that's all I have for you. Any final messages for all your fans out there wanting to find out about your podcast and what you have going on and where they can follow you?
No final messages, but if you liked what you heard, I am North Pod on any podcast service. And my social media is all North Pod Show, so X, Instagram, YouTube, and so on and so forth. Hopefully, if you didn't mind this chat and if you like listening to hashtag Kangaroos, you might find some similar content over at North Pod. Just thanks, Dean, for having me on. I think it's great that we can collaborate. I know you've said a couple of times it'd be good to have a couple of collaborations again next year. I'm certainly... Mm-hmm. Certainly open to that. I think it's great if we can, work together and just help each other spread the good word. But also, you know, it's great always to have different opinions, I guess. So I guess that's why you've often got guests on to kind of have some friendly debate. So I look forward to having some friendly debate about where Sheaths should be in 2024, and hopefully we can be celebrating some wins rather than lost number 20 in a row next year. Fingers crossed, at least.
Yeah, I think Sheaths should just play every position on the ground, even in the ruck, so to be honest with you. So,
yeah, clone him. I think that's what we should be spending our time on researching. How can we clone Sheaths? And then we might be in a better position.
Yeah, we might be able to get that flag sooner rather than later. But, I'll definitely get you and obviously Josh as well. Josh Neal, we'll do pre-season chat and talk about season predictions and so forth. And, we'll probably be in, I don't know, late June or maybe Feb or something like that. I think the season starts in March, so we're probably mid-Feb or something like that. We'll have a chat and, follow the North Pod. Have a listen. Like Jason sort of said, you get different opinions and it's good to listen to different ones. Mine aren't always right. I'm probably wrong more often than not. So, definitely listen to Jason if he gets guests on or whatever. Go from there. But, Jason, it's been a real pleasure getting to know you actually tonight. Because obviously we talk about the North performances during our podcast. So, it's good that people are able to listen and learn something new about you. And that's always a good thing. Thanks so much for coming on, and stay safe over Christmas.
Perfect. Thanks, Dane. You have a good Christmas too, and we'll connect in 2024.
So thank you very much to Jason once again for coming on the show to get to know you episode. So that's it for tonight, and thank you very much to all you Labor listeners for all the likes, retweets, and comments you all put out for the show. It's much appreciated. I couldn't do this podcast without your support, so if you can leave a rating or review on your favorite podcast platform you use as well, that would be awesome. So that's it for tonight, obviously, but I might be back before Christmas. I'm not too sure if I'll do another one this week. It probably will be another Get to Know You episode. I'll see how that goes. But if I don't do another one, then I'll try and do one the week after and just keep the once a week content going, I guess, until, you know, this really starts to ramp up in the preseason, and then I'll probably late January, early Feb, then I'll go back to two episodes a week are the standard. So yeah, see how we go. Anyways, that's it for tonight. So tonight I will leave a shout out to Jason Hunt at the North Pod Show. So bye for now, and go Roos.